Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good morning, folks. I tell you what, it is a gorgeous day at the beach. I was at the harbor earlier today eating breakfast, meeting with some accountability partners, and wow, you couldn't ask for a better morning. You know, we are in Chapter 9 of Tom Hopp's book, Time Out, Winning Strategies for Playing a Bigger Game in Life. I was on the phone with Tom yesterday, and what just a precious individual to talk with. He is not just a speaker. He's not just an author. He is a connector. I mean, it was so fun, as I could tell as we went through the conversation and we were chatting, that he was giving me information based on what he had seen, based on the conversations on the radio and emails back and forth. That's the type of mentor that you need. And folks, I want you to know right now, you may not think you can afford Tom. Maybe you think, man, Tom gets paid all this money. He writes these books. He's priceless. You know, if you go to TomHopt.com, just TomHopt.com, HAUPT.com, sign up for his newsletter. You're going to get some information, and you're going to have available to you for $37 a month, a monthly mentoring class, a bunch of information from Tom. I'm telling you, you need to do this right now. You know, today we're on the chapter being open to new plays. Now, this is something that if you've not been in sports, if you've not been in some type of a martial arts, yoga, something like that, if you've not been in the military, maybe being open to new plays is something different. I know that in the artistic realm, we call it freelance, we call it ad-libbing, you know, all kinds of stuff, just going with the flow. You got to be open. But here's what Tom writes in this first chapter. It's actually first paragraph. Are you ready to take yourself on? Are you ready to set for some new plays for your playbook? Now, this is great. You may have already had some resistance to what you've been reading. If so, good. Notice and just ask yourself, why the resistance? Most likely, anything you have resistance around merely means it does not reflect your current belief system at some level. And that's neither good nor bad. Now, listen to me here. This is awesome stuff. Because in the martial arts, when I started learning martial arts, the first thing that my sensei said was, Troy, you're your worst enemy. You're going to be resisting yourself. I'm going to tell you to make a move, and it's going to feel unnatural to you. So it was real easy as I started reading through this chapter to be able to put that into perspective. When I moved from traditional tempo karate and moved into Aikido, all of a sudden everything that I'd been taught in one aspect was just the opposite, because you move from offensive to defensive. And it's like, wow. Then as I started moving into the military and we started learning some very interesting combat moves, both offensive and defensive, it was a combination of all that. Well, guess what? That's what this is. We are our own worst enemies. We are going to resist ourselves. And I've caught myself doing that. Look, we talked about this on Monday. Over the weekend, you know, here my girls have a situation at a public mall. I take that dad role, that protective role, that dominance role, you know, and then I had to step back. I had to focus on what I was trying to change in my life through Tom's book, through his teaching, his mentoring. I listened to my accountability partners because they were going through the same thing I was, so we were all on the same page. We could empathize with each other, probably a little bit too much sympathy there for a minute, but then all of a sudden we realized, man, we got to figure out something else. See, you're going to be resisting yourself all the time. But here's what he says. Listen, let's address one such area in your life where you might have some resistance, the area of relationships. Whoa, that's always a toughie there. He goes on and says, are you willing to be open to new ideas and new plays to create better relationships in your life? Now, I've had a blessed life, a very unique life, because of the career paths that I've chosen. They've all been people-oriented. When I was a bounty hunter, I met some very interesting people. We would bring people back. I remember one day we had chased a guy from Kansas City, Missouri to Tennessee, and from Tennessee to Calamexi, California, right on the Mexican line, and ended up catching him. wasn't too bad. We ended up getting him. We started back across, and that's when we found out that his dad led a group of 1% bikers out of Arizona, known as the Hell's Angel chapter there. And it makes for some interesting conversation. It also made for some anxiety, I can tell you that. But I had a great, great time with this kid. We ended up listening to his life. He had tried to commit suicide by shooting vitamin E into his arm and all kinds of interesting things. And even after we got him back to jail, I ended up making sure that he got bonded back out, got some help. It was an interesting time. I've met a lot of what we call prostitutes on the street. Girls as young as 15 years old and as old as 45. Listening to their stories, hearing the hurt in their eyes, or seeing the hurt in their eyes, hearing the hurt in their voices. Listening as this 15, 16, 17-year-old girl would share how the physical abuse from a father, a brother, an uncle, a mother had put them on the street. I've met some very high-priced call girls. I've met some what we would call gigolos. Listening to these people share their experience, same type of physical action, you know, sex in exchange for money, but the reasoning behind it was so much different. I remember one lady who I got to be very close with, not on a personal level, just I constantly would bond her out. She was a high-priced call girl, $1,000 an hour, $5,000 a night. And I said, why do you keep doing this? You're so beautiful. You have such an education. She actually had a degree in psychology. And she said, Troy, this is the one time in my life where I'm in control. I have the power. You know, the streetwalkers, they're going through this thing, and their relationship is they've been used, so they're just used to being a victim. The call girls at some time in their life have been used also, but now it's a power trip for them. And now they're in control. Even the gigolos, a few of them that we have talked to, that we bond out of jail, is very interesting because in their case, they were looking for comfort. And when they were with these women, it was more than just sex. It was an emotional release. And you may say, Troy, what's that got to do with Tom saying? Here's the kicker, guys. Each one of us carries something in our relationship, something in our life that triggers us when we're trying to build relationships with people. And here's the kicker that Tom is going to talk about in this chapter. Effective communication is critical at creating better relationships and accomplishing our goals and our dreams. See, it's not about what need we have or what emotional craving we have. If we want to build new relationships, if we want to take the relationships we have and make them stronger, then we have to be able to effectively communicate. Most people talk too much. See, that's the kicker. Most of us are talking. Or, worse yet, if I'm going to use this because Tom writes about this. If you're in a conversation with a person, how many actual conversations are going on at once? Just you and another person. Well, Tom writes it this way. Is there one, two, or three conversations going on? He says, think about that before answering. I'm going to suggest that there's three. The conversation that can be heard out loud, the conversation going on in your head, and the conversation that's going on in the other person's head. Well, and if you don't think that's true, let's think about this for a second. We watch CNN, we watch Fox News, we watch a political debate. We see the left, we see the right, and then we see our way. So there's always three conversations going on at once. I thought, wow. He goes on and says, think about this. The conversation is in your head is from the fans in the stands. That's your what you're seeing, what you're saying, your belief system, your story. That's how you're perceiving it. What my mama used to say was, it's through your colored of lens. It's your rose-colored glasses. It's your world view. Whatever terminology you're used to, that's exactly what's going on. Same thing's happening on the other side. Let's use something close to my heart because I've been watching it the last few days. There's a judge in Wisconsin that has outlawed the National Day of Prayer. I want you all to understand the National Day of Prayer is not a Christian time. Anybody can pray. If you're Muslim, if you're Hindu, if you're Buddhist, if you're an atheist, I guess, it doesn't matter. This judge has called it unconstitutional. But yet the Congress and the Supreme Court has never ruled it unconstitutional. It said, hey, we're going to have a National Day of Prayer. Obviously, what the judge is seeing is one thing. What different religious sects would see would be another thing. And then what somebody, an atheist, might see on TV is even another. Always a different conversation, always through a different lens, always through a different perspective. Each conversation we have is that way. And that's what we've got to think about. Listen to what Tom writes here. In any verbal conversation between two people, talking and listening takes place. Talking is rather straightforward. Words are spoken out of one's mouth. That's considered talking. Listening, on the other hand, is a little more complex. When someone is talking to you, there is a distinction to be made between what you are hearing as opposed to what you are listening. Unless you're deaf, you will always hear what is being said. The question is, are you listening? If so, you are listening effectively. Now let's examine the differences. He is so good on this. Hearing is a biological phenomenon that has to do with sound wave frequencies that shape and the shape and the size of ears, and of course your eardrums. Listening, on the other hand, is a linguistic phenomenon. It's the place where language lives. It's a skill where meaning and interpretation of words are generated. Listen, folks, you're not going to remember all that, but it's so powerful. You know, everybody has a different meaning. Matter of fact, throughout history, meanings have changed. Let me use a prime example. In the 1950s, 1940s, 1930s, even the 1800s, if somebody, and we've seen this even in some Christmas themes, when somebody would say, "We had a gay-o time." It means they had a happy time. They had a fun time. Today, if somebody says, "I had a gay-o time last night," it could be have a whole different meaning. If somebody in the old days had said, you know, "We were sitting around the bar last night and I smoked a fag," that means they had a cigarette. Nowadays, that could mean they actually shot somebody that had a different lifestyle than theirs. This is how listening, interpretation, meaning can change. Now let's take it off of a somewhat controversial subject. Let's put it on a more, maybe closer to home subject. Somebody says, "Man, that is hot." They really mean, "Man, that's cool." But if they mean that that's cool, does it mean that it's cold, it's nasty? Or better yet, "Man, that is sweet." Well, we know that sweet means it's sugar, it tastes good. But it also means, "Hey, that's cool, I like that." That's gnarly. Now, that's a whole different conversation. See what I'm saying? Everything is a little bit different. Words, meaning, it's what you're listening, it's the interpretation that you have. It's what you mean compared to somebody else. When you're listening to someone, most times you're listening with your filters on. Listening to what this is crazy, but I just love the way he writes this. "Would you be surprised to know that there are three ways to listen? The first two ways are literally the same, most commonly used, and can look totally different depending on the body language displayed. In both cases, though, the first two ways are the least effective. The majority of the time, you're listening in agreement to what's being said, or you're listening in disagreement to what's being said. In other words, you're in alignment to a belief or point being communicated, or you're not in alignment to a belief or point being communicated." We've all seen this. Somebody's talking and everything's going great, and then all of a sudden they say something we disagree with. Boom. One of the most controversial subjects on planet, well, no, I won't say that. One of the most controversial subjects in the United States today, or better yet, one of the most controversial people in the United States today is President Obama. From what I've been able to interpret and what I've seen on TV, what I've read in blogs, what I've seen on the news, what I've heard around the breakfast tables, people either like President Obama or they don't like President Obama. They either agree with his ideology or they disagree with his ideology. He's either an American citizen or he's not an American citizen. There's no in-between for whatever, and that makes controversy. It depends on what people have heard. It depends on their filters. I find that unique. But yet, what happens if we take our filters off? What happens if we decide to listen without judgment? What happens if we to coin a phrase of the Supreme Court, if we only go by the rule of law and we take emotions out, what would happen then? See, your body language usually supports your belief system. Either people can tell I'm either for or against what's being said. Your eye contact, all that stuff. Now, at times, that may not be accurate. Now, Tom uses an example. At lunch, your wife makes the statement that she doesn't feel like she's being heard. First of all, if she uses the word feels like she's not being heard, we automatically know that she's a visual person. I can tell you that right now. But now let's bring this close to home. Paige and I jump in the truck. We head down the road. My eyes are scanning the highway in front of me and behind me, beside me. Paige is sitting on the other side saying, honey, let me tell you about a story. She's talking. She's sharing this story. I can't make eye contact with her. Every now and then I can say, uh-huh, okay, and I'm driving. Now she will say, Troy Dooley, are you listening to me? If I have not been listening to her, I will not know what she's saying, plain and simple. However, 9 out of 10 times, she will say, are you listening to me? And I can repeat the story, not verbatim, the context of the story in which she shared. Now, here's why I can do that. She shares her verbal stories the same way she writes. She paints me a picture of this story that she's going to be putting into words down the road. I can pinpoint, as I'm driving months later, I can drive down this same road, because we only have one beach road. And depending on where I'm at, I can say, honey, I can remember last month when we were here at this one location, and this is what you were saying. Here's why. My eyes are looking at landmarks. That's what my mind's picturing. When I do that, all of a sudden, her story pops back into my mind. Now, let's bring this closer to home to what Tom's saying here. When you're listening and you're unfiltered, and you're looking at that person, and I mean really listening to what that person has to say, then as they talk, you're going to, in your mind, have some landmarks. And when they say, man, are you hearing what I'm saying? You can say, you know what? Here's what I heard you say. Is this correct? And now you start to build a connection. Matter of fact, I'm gonna flip a second. There's a brand new book on the market by John Maxwell you should go buy if this is really a weakness in your life. The name of the book is Everyone Communicates, Few People Connect. What the most effective people do differently. Communication, listening, is both an art and a science. Tom just proved that. It's a science because it has to do with sound waves, your eardrum, and all that. It's an art because it has to do with linguistics. It has to do with that. Now, I'll take it even one step further. It has to do with, do you really care? See, do you really want to build with people? Are you willing to do some stuff? See, it takes a skill communicator to build relationships, if they're supposed to be true relationships. Too many times, what takes place is people communicate out of a technique that they've learned. They skim the conversation like they do a story in a book. They pick up key words and then they move on. Maybe they've learned NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. Maybe they've learned some other psychological type of manipulation. Maybe they've learned the art of persuasion, and they grab certain words. They model the body language, all with a predetermined outcome of something. Doesn't necessarily have to be business. Could be anything. I see this happen all the time. Matter of fact, sad to say, I'm sure I did this as a teenager. I would watch the women. I would find one. I would hone in. I would decide, that's the one right there. And what would you do? You would watch. Okay, that's the kind of shoes she wears. That's the kind of... Look at what colors those are. Oh, she likes those flowers. Oh, candy. All of a sudden, the communication isn't just in words. But see, if you really want to build communication, if you want to take your business, your relationships to the next level, if you want to do what Tom calls be with listening, where everything you have is focused on that person and in the conversation, then here's what you have to do. Number one, you got to be here now. You got to be present. You've got to eliminate distractions. Quiet the chatter from the fans in the stands and focus on the attention of the person talking. When I want Paige's undivided attention, or she wants my undivided attention, we go to the beach. We don't drive. We go to a special spot at the beach. And we go out on the beach where there's nobody there, and we listen to each other. Another place that we do this is there's a hidden place that's what just our little secret spot. And I'll put the truck in four-wheel drive, and we go back into the woods to this very secluded little spot that when I drive my truck through the brush of this little path, the tree limbs come back behind me. It's almost like a Batman and Robin scene. And then you can't see my truck. And we know that we won't be disturbed. Another time that most people really connect is during that foreplay time. I don't want to offend anybody, but it's when you're looking each other in the eye. It's that romantic time period where you're sitting there, you're laying there, you're in the pool together, the hot tub, and you got that, and that's when you're communicating. Can you picture asking your significant other to marry you in the middle of a Kiss concert? It's probably not going to happen. You want that undivided attention. So you have to be here now. You turn off the cell phones, the TV, the radio. Number two, notice your experience. Notice the feelings and the emotions that come up as you listen. Are you angry? Are you sad? Are you happy? Let me tell you a time when Paige and I were disconnected. I was 19, 20, I was probably 20, 21 years old. We're sitting at this beautiful, beautiful Mexican restaurant at the Plaza in Kansas City. It's a world famous place. And she slides two tickets across the table for a cruise. And she says, "Now that you're divorced, now I want to say yes, I want to marry you." I got sick, went downstairs and puked my guts out. I'd just gone through a divorce. Even though I wanted to be married to her and I loved her to death, that wrong place, wrong time, man. My stress was level. When I got back to the table, those tickets were gone. She cashed them in, and it was another year before she finally said yes to me that she would marry me. Total disconnect. Okay? Both sides. She asked at the wrong time. My stress level was high. Okay? Notice the experience. Number three, ask yourself why. Ask yourself, why am I feeling this way? Why am I reacting? Why am I judging this way? Number four, blank sheet. At that very moment when you're listening and clearing your mind of the distractions, the feelings, the questions, set aside your notices and instantaneously replace them with a blank sheet. Like a sheet of white paper, boom, just let your mind go blank. Now listen, this is how cool this is. Remember what I said. Over the weekend, my girls went through this crazy situation at a public mall. They got written up by the security guards. The whole youth group, the youth pastors got written up and told they were banned for 30 days. By Monday, I was livid. I shot a video that would have, it would have cut anybody, let alone the individual in the shopping mall and all that. I did that on a Sunday afternoon. My pastor said, "Can you please remove that, Troy? That's a little harsh, and we're trying to work through this." And out of respect and authority, I replaced that. I got rid of it. Monday morning, I'm sitting with the youth pastor's husband, who's their co-youth pastors. I'm sitting with one of the other girls' dad. There's me. Then there's a third party, Mr. Dale Vermillion, who's just a great guy, youth pastor in his own right, but he was outside of this. As we sat there and we spoke, all of a sudden the theme that came out of that conversation was, how can we protect our girls, but yet at the same time, how can we be different? You know, and understand we're all Christians, so we're sitting there saying, how can we be like Jesus? You know, Jesus said he came to save the world, not to condemn the world. How can we do that? Well, that's a tough call when you're an A-plus personality. You know, I'm sitting there, be like Jesus. Yeah, like when he was in the temple beating the snot out of all the coin changers. You know, so I'm sitting here trying to work through all this. I came home, I sat down, I'm going through Tom's book again and thinking, man, I've screwed this whole thing up. Here I am trying to be different. Can't be different. Messed it up. I shot another video, private video. Actually, I shot a public video and put it up on Facebook, replacing the other one. And then I put a personal video together and sent it to the general manager, the director of operations, and the director of security at the Commons, the Destin Commons here in Justice Board. I apologized. I also brought up some concerns and said, you know, I've come up with a compromise. What I would like to do is I would like to take the punishment for my girls. Instead of telling you that my girls did nothing wrong at all, I'm not even going to go there. If you just give me back their private information since they're minors, I will allow you to take my information, put it up, ban me for 30 days. Plus, I'll do some volunteer work if there's something you need to do. I really want them to understand I'm really sorry for my reactions to the actions and for whatever my girls may have done or it was perceived that they were done. Now, there were several other people involved in all kinds. I mean, we were all parents, so things got said, things got written, yada, yada, yada. Yesterday afternoon, I received an email back from the general manager who had already told me, Troy, I just need to look at all the facts. Once I've looked at all the facts, I'll come to a decision. Yesterday afternoon, he sent me back an email. I see why this guy is working for the Turnberry Corporation and why he runs a shopping mall. He said, first and foremost, I want you to understand something. Just like you have a home, the Commons is my home, and all the guests that are in my home, I need to make them feel welcomed. And you know, I think probably on both sides we did some things that maybe it didn't need to go that far. I thought, wow, amazing. I agree with him. See, I started looking in this conversation back on Monday with different filters. I put a blank sheet on. All of a sudden, I was there. I was in the conversation. I was realizing, what would I do if I was in Mr. Perry's position as the general manager of the shopping mall? And now he was showing me yesterday, hey, here's what I perceive. And he said, you know, we're just going to let this be bygones. We're wiping out all your kids' information. Don't worry about that. And I'd already told him, I've already talked to the girls and told them how they need to act. But his words of saying, this is like my home, Mr. Dooley, and just like in your home, there's rules and regulations, well, we have them here. We want it to be a nice experience for everybody. And I thought, wow. And I did go on and tell him, hey, thank you so much. I appreciate that, and my offer still stands. If there's anything I can ever do, call on me. I'll volunteer. I'll help you out because I believe that we took a lot of his time. You know, he's got a business to run. He's got obviously a shopping mall to run. And for whatever reason, it doesn't matter. There's no right or wrong here. I'm learning that from Tom. Sometimes it's perception. There isn't a right or wrong in it. It's like, wow. See, when you're in the conversation, all of a sudden, empathy is there. And see, Tom talks about this. Empathy is the action of understanding, being aware of, being sensitive to, and being vicariously experiencing the feelings and thoughts and experience of another person. Folks, that's what it's about right there. So I want you to take some risks today. I want you to find five people. Tom writes this in the book. Take a risk and list five people that you want to have better communication with and write down why. Commit to sitting down with them or talking with them over the phone and have an open, honest, and responsible conversation. Practice being it. Be with listening. Practice being right in the middle of the conversation. No filters on. Blank sheet of paper. And notice the difference. Since life rewards urgency, I challenge you to make something happen within the next 24 hours. Folks, this is why this book is so important. If you're wanting to change, if you have a passion to be a better person, if you have a passion to take your life to a new level, it starts with the relationships. Tomorrow we're going to be covering, are certain plays costing you the game? Man, go to TomHopt.com, get the book Time Out, put the name Vima in the little code. He'll donate $5 to the next project. Get into his mentoring program. I challenge you to do that. $37 a month. This book, I told him yesterday, Tom, it's made a huge impact in my life. He shared a secret with me, and since you're fans of Tom's on this radio show, I'm going to share it with you. He's doing a workbook, and I can hardly wait till the workbook comes out because I think it will be life-impacting too. Folks, live life like it's an epic adventure. We will see you back here tomorrow morning on Radio for Your Mind. Bye now.